and this is the Convict Australia podcast. Thank you for tuning in. On a bitterly cold winter's day in December 1834, Captain William Moxley readied the ship to take the epic journey from Woolwich, England to Hobart, Tasmania. The ship, George III, was to carry 308 people to the other side of the world. There were 220 male convicts below, as well as guards, their families, and crew. It had been smooth sailing for the first 7 weeks of their voyage, but as they approached the equator, a fire broke out and quickly swept through the ship. The flame had been accidentally lit by a crew member whilst drawing off spirits, and within moments had gained in size. All on board thought that they were doomed. Officers, crew, and convicts all scurried about trying to put the flames out. They worked tirelessly, but the fire gained momentum, and to their horror, the flames began to lick the walls of the magazine, where barrels of gunpowder were being stored. Two convicts by the names of William Nelson and David Jones ran blindly through the thick clouds of smoke and dragged the barrels of gunpowder out of the burning room just in the nick of time, saving them all from certain death. They both suffered extensive burns to their hands as the copper on the barrels was so hot it scorched them. But their courageous, selfless act earned them the respect of everyone on board. When the fire was brought under control, they assessed the damage and discovered that some of their stores had been lost. The Surgeon Superintendent, David Wise, suggested to the master that they pull into Cape Town to replenish their supplies, but he was denied. Instead, the master put everyone on half rations. It wasn't long before people were feeling the effects of scurvy take hold. Scurvy was a common illness on board ships, as it was caused by a lack of vitamin C. The main symptoms of scurvy were tiredness, swollen, bleeding gums, irritability, joint pain, and red or blue spots spreading over the skin. When the Tasmanian coast was sighted on the 12th of April, 1835, at least 12 convicts had died from the disease. There were 60 people on board who were seriously ill. 50 of those were bedridden and unable to care for themselves. With so many on board sick, there was a sense of urgency to reach their destination. They knew that if they could just get some fresh fruit and vegetables, they could overcome the effects of scurvy and prevent more deaths. As night fell, they rounded the southern bend of Tasmania. Captain Moxley decided to sail up the D'Entrecasteaux Channel instead of going around Bruny Island and risking being pushed out to sea. They had heard of the violent squalls that came down the hills between the north and south of Bruny Island, but decided to risk it. The weather seemed calm and visibility was good. They set off and took every precaution to navigate the Actian Reef, which had been charted in the Horsburgh Directory. Horsburgh was a hydrographer who had mapped the seaways in the area, and he hadn't noted any further dangers past that point. Regardless, the captain sailed through the channel slowly, with the leadsman checking the depth of the water while they proceeded. At 10 past 10, the leadsman raised the alarm that they were in very shallow water, and although the captain immediately ordered the helm to be put hard aport, the ship struck a rock. It hit ever so lightly at first, just grazing the rock, but then, with the rising swell, it crashed into the rock with such force it tore the rudder off, throwing people to the floor. As the increasing swell pounded the ship against the rock, the crew scrambled to their feet to release the cutter. As they worked to free it, they heard a terrible cracking sound over the roar of the ocean as the main mast slammed down. Wave after wave crashed over the deck, washing anything that wasn't tied down overboard. The crew struggled to stay upright as they attempted to free the boats. The first one to be freed went down stern first and was immediately swamped. When they had one boat safely down, the third mate decided to take it to Hobart to get help, as he thought they were only 15 miles or so from there. He set off with 10 other people on board the small boat. He soon realized that he had too many people on board, so he landed four of them at Three Hut Point. They rowed all night, weaving their way through the channel, expecting to see Hobart around every bend. But after several hours, they realized that they were a lot further away from their destination. In fact, the ship had been stranded 60 miles from Hobart. They pushed on, making it to the port at around 8 p.m. Meanwhile, the rest of the crew clamored about the deck. As the ship continued to be smashed against the rock, the convicts pleaded to be let out. The officers had locked them below deck to keep them from rushing the boats. In their desperation, they grabbed saws and hammers and tried to break themselves free. When Surgeon Wise came to them, they grabbed him through the grates and begged him to set them free. One said, quote, "You promised to stand by us," end quote. And he reassured them by saying, quote, "So I will," end quote. The officers then formed a guard around the hatchway, leveling their muskets at the convicts. The water continued to rise at an alarming rate. The convicts desperately continued to break down the hatchway, and officers fired shots. It was later claimed that they shot two convicts by the names of Robert Luca and William Yates, who were trying to escape. Many convicts came forward to testify that they saw the two convict men being shot. James Elliott, a convict, claimed, quote, "I was in the hatchway several minutes before I could get up. The soldiers kept me down and threatened to fire. I heard two shots fired. The first shot killed Robert Luca. And about 3 or 4 minutes after, another shot was fired, and I saw another man fall. When I was knocked down from the hatchway, I fell upon the body of R. Luca," end quote. The officers denied it, claiming that they were firing signals of distress only. The bodies of Luca and Yates were inspected for signs of shot marks or cutlass marks, but the bodies were so badly decomposed it was impossible to know for sure, or even if it was really them. It had only been minutes since the mast had crashed down, but water was washing over the deck, taking the longboat with it, flinging it and the people who had climbed aboard from side to side, until eventually it tipped overboard. There it bobbed violently up and down with the treacherous waves tangled in the rigging. The captain did all he could to free it, even getting himself jammed at one point, but luckily was pulled into the boat before being seriously harmed. Once the longboat was free, Surgeon Wise rushed to climb aboard, not looking back at the convicts he left behind. He gave no thought to the 50 convicts that were too sick to get out of their beds. There were 42 people crammed onto the longboat as they set out to shore. Just as the water level rose, the convicts broke free, and many of them made it to the upper decks. Officers still tried to prevent others from coming up, but the damage was done. Most of the prisoners had drowned. Many of them had drowned within a few minutes of the ship striking the rock. The remaining bulk of the survivors were precariously clutching to each other on the port side, the only part of the ship still above water. Helplessly, they watched on as the longboat left them stranded. It took hours before the captain made it to shore. He had trouble finding a safe place to drop the passengers, as it was such a rocky coastline, but eventually pulled into Southport Beach. He dropped 36 of them as close to the beach as possible, and they weighed in with waves coming up to their shoulders. He and the remaining five men turned around and headed straight back to the sinking ship. Meanwhile, The 100 or so people on board George III stood shivering, clutching each other in the moonlight. At 4 in the morning, the mizzen mast jolted them out of their shocked state when it snapped off and joined the tangled mess that lay overboard. It had the effect of righting the ship a little so that more of the deck was out of the water. Thoughts of their imminent death must have run through their minds. When the captain and his small crew of men were spotted returning at about 6 a.m., cheers went up from the relieved crowd. Women, children, and invalids were assisted by the captain into the longboat. There were many children who had travelled with the ship, including two newborns that had been born on the journey out. They managed to get between 40 and 50 people on the longboat and took off again. The crew were exhausted, but they powered on, and once they were able to unload this batch of people safely on the beach, they turned around again and headed back to the sinking ship. As they rowed back out to the wreck, they were unsure of what they would find. Would the ship be completely submerged by now? But to their relief, they not only spotted George III, but also another vessel. It was the Louisa that had been passing and spotted the ship in distress. The Louisa picked up the remaining survivors and headed to Southport Beach to pick up the others. However, when they arrived, they found the assistant surgeon McGregor missing. He had wandered into the bush looking for help. The captain got everyone on board the Louisa, except for seven men, who were instructed to stay behind and look for the surgeon. By this time, news had reached Hobart that urgent assistance was needed. Three vessels were sent to the scene and met the Louisa en route. They had been equipped with appropriate provisions. Two of the vessels returned to Hobart with the Louisa, but the tiny paddlewheel steamer, Governor Arthur, went to rescue the surgeon and the seven men who had been left behind on Southport Beach. By the time they reached the beach, the surgeon had been found, but all of the men were suffering from cold and exposure to the elements. The Governor Arthur then made its way out to the wreck to check that there were no more survivors in need of rescuing. When they arrived, they were met with a sorry scene. George III was all but underwater. The only person visible was an elderly convict by the name of John Roberts. Unfortunately, Roberts didn't know how to swim, so he had tied himself to the ringbolt and drowned. Accounts vary slightly in number of the people who drowned that night, but there were at least 133 people in total. 127 of them were convicts. There was an inquiry, but the accounts varied so much, no one will ever truly know what happened that night and why so many convicts lost their lives. The Court of Inquiry did find that Moxley and the officers were free of blame and that their navigating had been well done. It was just bad luck that the rock was there and had never been spotted before. That fateful rock is now known as the King George and appears on nautical charts. Thank you for listening to the Convict Australia podcast. If you'd like to show your appreciation and get more involved, there are a number of ways you can. The first is by signing up to Convict Australia on Patreon, and you will get some perks like the Convict Australia newsletter. Secondly, leave a review and tell your friends and family. This really does make a huge difference. And lastly, join the Facebook and Instagram group Convict Australia. All the links I've mentioned will be in the show notes. Thank you again. Till next time.